in a bright yellow envelope. If you accidentally damage or lose your ballot and would like a replacement ballot, or if you have not received the ballot yet and believe you are a current KPFT member, please email me at les-kpft2016@pacifica.org or call 832-930-2030. Pacifica Delegate Elections use the Single Transferable Vote System, or STV, where members can rank the candidates in their order of preference, first choice, second choice, and so on. To learn more about STV, please visit elections.pacifica.org. Completed ballots must be received by September 30th. If you're interested in learning more about the candidates, please visit elections.pacifica.org. Thanks again for your support of KPFT.
You are listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston. Coming up next, Technology Bites.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat
who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway.
Parental discretion is advised.
Hello.
You got a station ID. You're listening.
I already did the station ID. That was very professional. Thank you. This is the show. We don't have to be professional.
Okay. We don't have to be professional.
Right.
When everything is going to go right tonight because, well, you'll hear in a second. Welcome to Technology Bites. Wow. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
What are you guys doing?
I'm Flicted.
Forget I said anything and he's...
Brewhouse.
Yeah. Gee whiz.
This could have been a perfect show.
It could have been, but no, we don't do that.
No.
I would say anymore, but ever.
It's been a while.
Never
so
seen
we got
myself.
Pete in the studio. Pete came down from sunny San Antonio.
Yes, came over and had a quick opportunity where I could duck out and come over in person, and duck figured I would.
And cover.
He took the 10.
Yes. Yes.
Did
I
he
did.
Take the 10?
He took the 10.
If you're in L.A. speak. The 10.
So welcome to the show. We're glad you could be here. We also have a female voice in the studio. Barrett, you want to introduce your friend?
Oh, yeah. Tara is here.
Tara.
Tata. I can't quite say her name right.
Wow. That's bad.
She, Teresa.
She that's not good.
She can't hear Terabyte. You, nor does she have a microphone.
Yeah.
We should at least give her ears. There's ears in there?
We don't have a splitter.
You guys are terrible.
A double splitter.
Yeah, we've got a full house tonight. Everyone's
I would say
here.
She could come in here, but stupid Pete showed up and ruined that.
He did, and he is. Yeah, so it's a full house. It feels like, you know, if it wasn't so, you know, that little bit of humidity and warmth, it would feel kind of wintry with all this. I don't know why. Maybe because it's like Thanksgiving or Christmas when everybody finally shows up all at one
kind
time.
Of a homecoming kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's also finally getting where when you come in to start the show, the sun is not like fully out anymore.
Blindingly.
Oh, it's dark.
I thought you maybe you were making a Game of Thrones reference. I thought we were about to experience like the red Jay Lee.
No, Game of Thrones is never coming. It's going to be the eternal wait.
Hold on. Let me set up the video camera.
The red show.
Yeah, Jay took the 12. Megapixels. 12 megapixels, not to spoil
all
or anything.
All the megapixels.
I have all the pixels.
All the pixels.
Well, yes, I've got the new iPhone 7 Plus.
Show it to everyone.
Look at
on the radio.
The radio.
You can hear my voice cutting out because it's in front of the microphone.
Does it hum? Like,
does it explode?
It, yeah.
Is that the one that explodes?
Well,
the hiss. Yeah,
you know what would have been funny? I was thinking about this because I called it, because of Barrett, I called it the new hotness. But really,
I touched it and not broken it.
The new hotness is really the note, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's on fire.
Burning a hole in my pocket.
All right. Well, thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next week.
All right. We are out of
here.
We're
just going to all sit and look at Jay's phone for the rest of the two hours. Visit
us online at geekradio.com. Do it. Do it now.
Oh, we have IRCs, too.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for reminding
me.
Yeah,
so now everybody
stuff.
Rush in and see if you can see if we can max out the number of simultaneous connections.
Ooh, that's possible now.
We have new IRCs. So what are the Flicted or Pete?
Got the new IRCs.
What are the
IRC.geekradio.com.
Geek Radio. Wow. There we go. There it is.
The time
hey,
thing.
You can do that with mine, too, because I set the server up, so the original the original name is irc.failure.net.
Failure.
But you need to say it like not like a cuckoo, like a parrot. You need to say it like depressed or something.
Failure.
.net.
.net.
That's right. You can join us on IRC, irc.geekradio.com or irc.failure.net.
Failure.
.net.
.net.
It's .net.
Yeah, so if you want to IRC with us, you can IRC there. And, the website, the
still
IRC.
Still on Pound Tech Bytes.
Yeah, still Pound Tech Bytes. Probably the only channel on that IRC server. Did you lock that down, or can
I still haven't done that. You can still make channels.
You should set up a secret channel for only the hosts to be in, so we can back channel talk to each other.
Yeah, I could do that. Yeah. But the thing is, a lot of times people aren't even on IRC regularly, so I wasn't sure if that would have
the
much
main
benefit.
Channel is a back door. Back channels. It's a circle irk.
I get it.
Wow, I could be so clever. All right, so anyway, I give out the phone number, but it's useless. So, but if you did want to send a question in to the show tonight, you can...
only IRC. We only take questions via IRC.
Oh, there you go. Somebody else.
You can send a
phones.
Text message to Groovehouse's personal phone number.
I think not.
What's your phone number again so people don't text it?
713-526-5738.
There we go.
Send a text to the landline.
We need to find some app where people can only ask their questions via emoji.
Well, then we wouldn't be able to understand it.
I don't speak emoji. Then
you just make it whatever you... There was some app where it was like guessing, like where they used emoji to communicate. I think it was movies. And it was kind of astonishing because you could get into a groove where you you could guess them, because once you know you typed in the answer or whatever to see what the
only
because
emoji...
once you saw the twinning emoji, you were just like, The Shining.
There was some journalist couple that decided they were only going to communicate in emojis for like a period of like 6 months or something like that, and they actually got fairly good at it. But there were also some like emergencies where someone went to the hospital and they like over and over they tried so like stabbing, car, pipe hit, bleeding, you know, like all these different pictures, and it just went horribly wrong. Where you just need to pick up a phone and say like, "Hey, I get hit by a car, please come get me to the hospital." So that was interesting. It can be done, but you've got to kind of create your own language. I don't think you know.
Yeah, well, and you should only do it for that initial part of the relationship when you're annoyed. To yourself and all those around you as a couple would be when you want to communicate in only emojis.
Huh. The IRC's not working.
It's working for Woo-hoo. Me. Huh?
Weren't you having IRC problems last week, Jeff?
I always have IRC problems.
Those who rushed in first and blocked out all the slots that are available from this IP address are doing
fine.
Is
it? Are you getting an error message?
There were only three.
I'm trying to join the room, irc.geekradio.com.
Failure.
And it just doesn't pop up the I've joined the room window.
Pop up the volume?
Pop up the ad block.
Maybe you should stop using Colloquy and use an IRC application that was written this century.
Oh, judgmental much?
Yeah, I use Colloquy and it's working.
Does that exist?
Yeah, there's a couple. IRC just got updated, actually. So if you want to use a incurses-based IRC client, that would be the way to do it.
All right. It's still trying to connect to Freenode. All right. So anyway, welcome to the show. We're glad you're here. I have a new iPhone. Barrett handled it, and it still works.
Both cameras still work. So that's what's interesting to me. So it's like picture in picture, but now with cameras, to where you can have a camera taking an overall picture, and then on a separate, completely optical lens, you can actually do a zoom in.
So yes, you can do a 2x optical zoom.
Well, and when you take the picture, it's actually using, I think it uses both lenses, and then it
Like some kind of interpolation.
Is using that so that you can adjust focus and that kind of stuff after you've taken the picture.
Yeah.
Kind of the Lytro trick.
Kind of. I think. Yeah, I'm not sure on that, but for sure it has two lenses on the back. One is normal focal length and the other one is twice that.
So Jay's selfies will now be in. Is it 7 megapixels?
Well, that's not that.
That's,
but the front-facing camera is 8 megapixels.
So when you shoot RAW with that back camera, it's going to be taking like the little short Harry Potter video. It's going to be doing the wide angle and the other one and all
that's the thing I haven't looked at. Thank you for reminding me while you do the news. I'm going to go look for the settings for turning on RAW.
What are those things called back in the olden days where they took two pictures and then you had that
stereoscope.
Stereopticon?
A daguerreotype?
Yeah.
Phenomicon?
So do you think...
opposed to the daguerreotype.
So do you think...
talking to me?
Do you think somebody will, like, hack it so that they can make those with that phone, like, where it'll take two pictures?
Apple's released one, but you have to have two iPhone 7 Pluses to power it.
Yeah. Well, the lens separation isn't enough for any kind of...
It's like micro 3D.
But if you had two iPhone 7s... and you put them together with special software.
We could build a very large wooden badger.
That is one of the unsung features of GoPro cameras is they have software to do the stereoscope, and you can put two GoPro cameras on a mount, one side by side, and do stereo type 3D pictures. And they have that built into their software, and I've never seen anybody use it.
Well, see, what you have to do is you need to get a portable virtual reality setup, and then you put the GoPros on either side of the virtual reality helmet, and then you have real virtual reality.
Virtually.
Really?
In real time.
With only a little bit of
lag. I'm sure that would only screw with you just a little bit.
That's right. It's only a little bit of lag.
Because the cameras would be like farther apart than your eyes actually are.
What's the worst thing that could happen?
For total irony, I fired up Lime Chat and now you've got spyware. Ketchup.
Suddenly signed up for Ketchup.
No,
Lime Chat's awesome.
It connected right up to irc.freenode when it wouldn't do that before. It was telling me it wouldn't let me connect, and now it's all of a sudden it's connected to Freenode.
And now your browser's got this cool search bar in it too that you didn't have before.
All right. Well, I would say we're going to do the Technology Bites Info Shot, but maybe I don't feel like it now. All right, now we're going to do the Info Shot. We're not going to go to San Antonio, though, because Pete's right here. So if he cuts out at 32, there's going to be...
It's in my head.
It's going to be... All of a sudden, Pete's just going to be moving his lips and nothing's coming out. It's going to turn out it was not a connection.
And
it was
doors and dogs. And
I'll start flickering in and out of reality.
It's going to turn out that he's got some kind of palsy.
He's got 832 narcolepsy.
Nice.
All right. So let's do the Technology Bites Info Shot. Take it away, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
So our first story is one that I heard about a few days ago, and I didn't hear more, and I expected to, and I think probably more people, you will be hearing more about this story as it goes forward. On September the 13th, owners of HP OfficeJet, OfficeJet Pro, and OfficeJet Pro X, or is it 10? I don't know, began contacting third-party ink vendors by the thousands, reporting that their HP printers no longer accepted third-party ink. The last HP printer firmware update was pushed in March 2016, and it appears that HP had set a time bomb ticking in its customers' printers, counting down to the date when they would no longer take refilled ink or third-party ink stuff. HP says the March update's purpose was to, quote, protect HP's innovations and intellectual property. This is like in 2003 when Lexmark, which was part of IBM at that time, sued Static Controls, saying the company had violated the Digital Millennium Copyright Act by reverse engineering its toner cartridges and refilling old ones that could successfully pass Lexmark's checks for valid full cartridges. Lexmark had an I am empty bit in their cartridges. When the cartridge ran out of toner, the bit flipped to true. So even if you refilled it, your printer wouldn't use it because it had, the bit had been flipped. Static Controls figured out how to flip the bit back to false. We fixed the glitch.
We flipped the bit.
Another reference for you. The 10th anniversary of Idiocracy, if you can imagine. It's been out that long. So anyways, HP will likely raise similar arguments when inevitably its competitors start making cartridges that trick your printer into obeying you rather than HP again. But there's a potential difference between HP and Lexmark, namely that HP cartridges now have lots of copyright software, not just the I am empty bits and access control systems. This isn't just true of HP cartridges. Software and access controls that give manufacturers the legal right to reach into your home and boss you around via your gadgets. This is from Boing Boing, so they're a little bit more editorial in their voice on articles. Has proliferated into pacemakers, insulin pumps, and implanted defibrillators, into thermostats, baby monitors, and home security. This is the Internet of Things maybe nightmare. One of the other side things of this is that any security researchers who disclose defects in systems covered by this part of the DMCA face civil and criminal penalties, so they don't release these to where people could know what kind of vulnerabilities are out there. Remember, HP printers have already been successfully targeted by attacks that let bad guys take over your whole network just by tricking you into printing a single page. Once HP can invoke the DMCA to shut down the disclosures, the bugs will continue to fester, but we won't get to know about them. So, thanks for that. I wonder, in March, had they already done their split into two companies, or was that pretty far along? You wonder, was this just part of the deal? It's like, we've got to make money somehow. How can we put the screws to them? They got to buy our cartridges. So, and then speaking of putting the screws to them, apparently through a misconfiguration, the DNS records for North Korea were inadvertently revealed to the outside world, and so the entire North Korean externally facing internet was revealed to researchers. They mapped the whole thing, And it turns out there are just 28 domain names using the .kp top-level domain. 28.
Set in perspective, Grand Theft Auto 5 has 83 websites.
We almost have 28 domain names going to our IRC server, or we will at some point once we start adding Cuckoo and other things into the various names of the server. Yeah, the only domain name for a commercial company was for Silly Bank. It's S-I-L-I, so no, it's not like some kind of Monty Python North Korean gag, which offers email services for the North Korean market. At the time of this article, the website was down. So the deal is that how did anybody get a look at the North Korean web? Well, let's see. I think this was yesterday.
I can tell you.
Someone posted it out on Reddit, and actually the Korean web is having a very hard time right now because I went out there too. So many people are going through those, you know, those 28 listed domains and getting these websites, so they're having a really hard time keeping up traffic. There's a list of the sites that are out there right now. It looks like there was, we can run through them a little bit. Actually, yeah, it's like error. So everything's like error, I guess, koryo.com.kp. So everything's .kp. So there's a flight ticket website, a culinary website, a site similar to Yahoo and MSN. There's some religious websites, a sports website, a charity for the elderly. Not very much. And most of them are currently down. So Silly Bank right now is currently down.
They have
too much traffic.
Turns out that they had a single /22 CIDR block allocated to them. So that's 1,024 IP addresses. And the way this got out was somebody, some North Korean admin who may or may not be with us anymore, accidentally configured one of the name servers to allow a global zone transfer. Mm-hmm. And so somebody noticed and was able to really quickly just say, hey, I'm also a .kr DNS server. Why don't you just give me your zone file? And it popped it right over.
Transferred the whole
which
thing, yeah.
Ordinarily you cannot do. That is a very, very bad thing. You don't ever want to do that. So because North Korea has that /22 of IP addresses, IPv4 addresses, and they're, you know, it's part of the global address space. They're not using RFC 1918 or anything to hide anything. Once you knew what the addresses were, because you had the zone file, you could simply go and and visit the websites. They apparently did not have that configured to block and only allow traffic to and from within that 22.
In North Korea, service denies you.
So now everyone can read, you know, great leaders' favorite recipes and, you know, all of the other things
the
that were on
site.
There.
There's Pyongyang International site. Film Festival. Yeah.
And the domain names, though, it's like cooks.org.kp, friend.com.kp, hellofriend.com.kp.
Great leader is
I
your
guess
friend.
That's their, like, Facebook thing.
Yeah. Their social media.
Social media for the 9 people that are allowed to use it.
GNU.rep.kp. And though that has nothing to do with the...
It's some of them are kind of coming up a little bit.
With
sorry.
The GNU Foundation, it's some sort of like wellness and... Well, very many
oh,
unhappy
see now,
faces coming from
what,
a...
What I'd like to browser. Do is hit it up with Nmap and see if you can get an OS fingerprint and see what the OS fingerprint comes back as, if they're using their special North Korea version of Linux for their servers, or if they're using a regular distribution.
I'm sorry, KPFT Broadband, but you're about to go today.
About to go to Nmap Town.
For some reason, North Korea has suddenly become very hostile to public radio.
We must destroy Pacifica.
This is an act of right aggression here. By the American terrorists.
North Korea's elite is notoriously unforgiving to those who embarrass it. Those who make mistakes do so at their peril.
They must be upset all the time, then.
Last year, a turtle farmer was executed on the order of Kim Jong-un for incompetence. What, did the turtles get away? I mean, he had a stampede.
Stop them!
Turtles were not good enough.
They're very slowly getting away.
He was expecting the turtles for Great Leader to be much faster. Great Leader was disappointed in the turtles' speed.
The execution actually took a day longer than they expected because they had to wait for the turtles to actually get outside of the area to be considered escaped. So too was Defense Minister Hyun Young Kall, I think that's how they'd say it, who was brutally killed with an anti-aircraft cannon.
What?
After he fell asleep during a military parade.
Wait a minute, he was brutally killed with an anti-aircraft cannon?
Accidentally.
Yeah. No, on purpose. That's on. He was executed by pointing an
terminate with extreme prejudice
after
kind
he fell asleep during a military parade. The part I wonder though is, did they do it while he was still asleep? Is it like, no, don't wake him? wheel the
again,
giant anti-aircraft.
I know it's not funny, but it's kind of funny.
It's pretty sad. Imagine living under a place with some kind of narcissist. We don't talk politics.
You wouldn't live as 20 millimeter cannon. You wouldn't live very long.
What if Trump gets the key, the codes to the 20 millimeter cannon?
Trump Jung.
Danger, right. Danger, Will Robinson.
All right, moving on.
Okay, moving on to something else. And here's, speaking of turtles.
All right.
Which we were.
Pacific Standard Magazine has an article that speaks to a topic that we've brought up every once in a while, which is, why is American internet so slow?
Oh, that's because we're scanning North Korea
That's right. We're using all the bandwidth.
In a couple minutes, it will come back.
It says, if you're in America and getting a download speed of more than 50 megabits per second, which... For the people in the studio, probably I would bet most of us are getting more than not
I have 50
right
50
now,
is what I've got.
But at home are getting 50 megabits per second or more. I get 300 at home.
I have a static IP address.
So if you're getting 50 megabits per second, you're in great shape. If you're getting less than that, which are, odds are better than not that you are, because the country's median speed is way less than that, then you have a below-average connection. Is this your fault? No. Internet speeds in the United States have tripled over the past 3 years, but we still rank outside of the top 10 in peak and average download speeds. The U.S. has an average of 15.3 megabits per second, while South Korea has 29 megabits per second. The fastest in the world. The slowest in the world is probably North Korea, which has 29 megabits that they share amongst the entire population. Not per second, per day. So how does the world's largest economy have such a low ranking? Basically, they kind of deconstruct that. And the kind of TLDR on it for you is that there are two historic networks in play that were already in place in America that we use. The first is full of copper wires that made up the original telephone network. Slowly these began to be replaced by coaxial cable, which is still a copper core with insulation around it to provide better and quicker signal transmission. And these two systems are how most of our internet is still connected, and in today's age they are both ancient technologies. In 2010, President Barack Obama's administration began its national broadband plan, which sought to fix this problem. The plan involved the deployment of more than 100,000 miles of internet infrastructure and has been a huge reason why the speeds have gone up like they have, but there's still a logjam in place because the government can only do so much. AT&T, Comcast, Verizon, and Time Warner have a natural monopoly since they've been at it the longest. The Telecommunications Act of 1996, this is something that's 20 years old, was supposed to incentivize competition to upset those established businesses, but it didn't take into account the near impossibility of doing so. The problem is you have to have a network to start with. And so even though they started with a crappy copper network, they had a network so they could get business and start and then enhance it, where anybody starting from scratch, Google Fiber is a big deal. They didn't start from scratch. What they did is bought dark fiber that a bunch of companies like over-optimistically invested in, and Google bought it for a song later to get them the stuff. The thing that's interesting and that we've pointed out a few times on the show is the places where they'll lay down fiber lines instead of using the crappy old network is in the places where they've got competition. Comcast has fiber lines in Nashville, Tennessee. Nashville, Tennessee. You mean the city that's got its own fiber optic network that competes? Yes. AT&T has fiber lines in Austin, Texas. Google Fiber's in Austin, Texas. And Google is in Nashville as well. And the thing is, you know, Google offers reasonably priced high-speed connections as high as 1,000 megabits per second.
That's a lot of megabits.
Unfortunately, we don't have the, like, echo and reverb that should go with when you say 1,000 megabits per second. So, you know, unfortunately, the future of Google Fiber is kind of murky. Google's cut their staff in half while halting plans for future fiber rollouts beyond what they've already announced. So we don't know who's going to force them to upgrade, but it's going to be it will be interesting to see what happens. It's something, you know, because one of the things is the alternative to Google opening up competition is local municipal governments opening up competition, except there's been a huge effort around the country to, at the state level, to outlaw that kind of approach, making it where they're not allowed, where cities or towns are not allowed to roll out stuff. The sad thing is there used to be so many big plans for stuff. There was a big plan to, like, Wi-Fi a huge chunk of Houston, and that kind of it started as a municipal thing, and then it turned into some kind of semi-private thing.
Earthlink
and then
came
away.
In and tried to buy it out, and then they defaulted on a contract with the city, and things just got people saw a lot of money, and then just everything fell apart after that. Yeah,
and then I guess there are some other ways, you know, besides fiber. Though I got a couple of articles. This one, you know, I guess full disclosure. I mean, I have T-Mobile. This, you know. And the story mentions T-Mobile, but the real story is that it's talking about 5G, and there is some competition amongst the carriers. T-Mobile's chief technology officer Neville Ray laid out his vision for the carrier's move into 5G. This is after T-Mobile mocked the other carriers for hyping 5G, so then now they've started themselves. Working with Nokia, Ericsson, and Samsung, T-Mobile was able to show off speeds of 12 gigabits per second. That's more than three times as fast as the trials as Verizon conducted back in February. Just to kind of put that in perspective, Verizon's 5G trials alone represented a connection that was several hundred times faster than today's LTE, and 3.5 times faster than Google's fiber internet service. So, the tough part is that, you know, the wireless thing, and it'll be awesome if you have those kinds of great speeds, except, you know, you have to get reception. So there's only certain places that are going to get it. This may end up acting, I guess this is possible to act as a competitor to high-speed internet. Either that, or I guess it would be, this is where we go to the kind of always-on super high speed internet. The sad part is, so they're working to get that to go to your phone, but your whole house will max out at, you know, at 15, the average, because, you know, unless there's competition where you are from the earlier story. T-Mobile has said it's working with the FCC and its majority owner Deutsche Telekom and standards bodies in its preparation for 5G. So that's coming. I think they're talking about the 5G internet stuff will really get going in 2018. So it's early days. So don't go rushing out to see about getting 5G internet on your iPhone 7 or even your next year's iPhone. I'll start the rumor now. Yeah, the next iPhone is going to have 5G on it. The number 5 and the letter G will be on the keyboard of the phone. And then here's an interesting one, you know, another interesting way to get broadband to people. And I like that when you describe it, the headline way you describe it is not accurate for how it actually works. You're going to have an expectation when I say, and it's going to be incorrect. AT&T has revealed AirGig, multi-gigabit wireless broadband that uses power lines. So you probably are assuming this is like that thing from a few years ago where power companies were going to deliver internet over there. I think, wasn't it Enron or one of them was going to do it here in Houston, was going to do internet over there, over power lines. But no, this is actually putting antennas on the towers that power lines have, but not really using the power lines other than that they have right-of-ways and they have towers every so many feet, they've invented – it's a low – on the plus side, it is a low-cost, high-speed wireless internet technology that relies on plastic antennas positioned along medium-voltage power lines. So the signals don't go through the power line. They go alongside. Instead, the plastic antennas are attached to the power lines and serve as a mesh network to distribute signals to homes and businesses. AT&T is looking for a location somewhere in the next year with a favorable regulatory environment, since the carrier would need to partner with an existing electric utility. It relies on more than 100 patents, according to an AT&T statement. There's no direct electrical connection to the power lines, although – and this one, okay, I will give credit. This one sounds pretty cool. The network components could receive their power through inductive physical principles just by their proximity to the lines. So that's kind of cool. That means you don't have to run a cord or any of that. It's just, you know, the little plastic antennas on the line, and it's kind of absorbing electricity from the field, the electric field that surrounds the wires. So I like that one. AT&T said testing will decide what frequency AirGig will use for commercial deployment, which could occur sometime around 2020 after the carrier rolls out 5G wireless. The frequency AT&T uses will obviously affect the range of the signal and the speed, as well as whether it is over a licensed or unlicensed band. You know, the big thing with this is by using power lines, they don't have to dig trenches and put fiber optic in it. A utility company could use the technology to spot problems in its power lines from something like a downed tree. So there's a little bit of a Internet of Things to it. So it's got all the like trendy buzzwords are found. Aside from saying it is low cost, AT&T didn't offer any other details. They're going to announce the field test soon. AirGig has already been tested in outdoor locations on campus settings. John Donovan, Chief Strategy Officer for AT&T, said, quote, "We've had it up and running 4K video and cameras on campuses for quite some time." So he said the trial could be in an area where existing broadband is expensive, even in the U.S. I don't know if that's you just wonder who's that wink and nudge to, you know, we could put this really cheap wireless technology that'll support even 4K video somewhere where broadband's expensive. Obviously, it wouldn't be where broadband's expensive through AT&T, would be my guess. And then finally, another story we've talked about for a while, but I think finally more people are starting to get serious about this potential issue. You know, as the elections get closer, you know, the presidential elections, in case you, I don't know, been under a rock, officials are still looking for last minute fixes to ensure that the patchwork of voting technology used around the country can fend off the increasingly troubling prospect of hacker attacks. I mean, what do you do? Imagine that if it clearly, say they really bungle it. You know, somebody tries to hack it and they really bungle it so that there's, you know, I don't know, in one state more votes are cast than there are people in the state or some other thing where you know they screwed it up. Then, you know, how do you know they didn't hack other places and how do you fix that afterwards? I mean, just the attempt, even a half-assed attempt at hacking the election could be really problematic for the country. You know, how do you decide when this is done? The latest of the efforts to try and fend off these attacks, Georgia Representative Hank Johnson is set to introduce two bills today designed to shore up that fragile system's security. The Election Infrastructure and Security Promotion Act of 2016 would mandate that the Department of Homeland Security classify voting systems as critical infrastructure. And then the other one is called the Election Integrity Act, would limit which voting machines states can buy and also create a plan for handling system failures.
We'll legislate the hackers out.
Yeah, which let's see, it's September and the election's in November, so I don't know how much this is. I'm guessing, boy, I think we're really close to locking down that 2020 election. Right after President Pokemon comes up on his second term, then maybe we'll have a clean vote. The bills reflect a growing debate about whether designating voting tech as critical infrastructure, you know, like, let's see, you know what critical infrastructure is? That's the public water supply, energy systems, transportation, communication grid, and the financial sector, but would that help secure the U.S.'s highly decentralized voting setup? In the wake of the Democratic National Committee breach and increasingly brazen Russian cyber espionage attacks, concern is mounting about the potential for election hacking in the 2016 presidential race and beyond. Voting registries and election board websites have been compromised. Security researchers have shown that electronic voting machines are vulnerable, and agencies like the FBI are on alert. For now, all the methods and equipment and the responsibility for maintaining the security is on a state-by-state and county-by-county basis. It seems to me that it would make sense to have a standard, you know, so that your vote, if we're presumably all kind of equal in the law, that your vote, that you know that it, that you could know that it's getting counted, and that there would be, you know, the sad thing is, and this is just talking about the security side, but if it is hacked, there's a large number of places where the recount process is basically they go to the same machines that presumably been hacked and say, okay, retally the votes. Oh, hey, same number as before. Mickey Mouse got 3 million votes and, you know, the very silly party got nil, and that's it. You know, and so it's really sort of sad that we are now 2 months away from the election, or less than 2 months. We're six or eight weeks away from the election, and they're talking about, they're trying to figure out if there's a way to secure the voting. For some critics, though, the idea that the Department of Homeland Security could become involved is worrying. They're afraid that you know, you get into the issue of the central government being involved, which I think there's some legitimate, there's a possibility for legitimate concern. You know, if you've been following the news in the Russian elections, to secure their voting, they have closed circuit cameras that broadcast to the internet so that anybody can watch. And even with that, they had people like stuffing ballot boxes, like on, there's it's on YouTube. They show where people are walking up with a sheaf full of ballots and cramming them in the machine. But we don't even have that. We just have the electronic thing. And, you know, once you get into hacking the hardware, then how do you know that you know, the buttons that you pushed gave the correct, recorded the correct vote? I mean, it's as difficult as that. In Russia, I thought it was kind of clever. Apparently Reuters was trying to test the integrity of some of the voting things. And so one of their reporters, like, registered and voted, I'm guessing, I hope legally, but whether or not it was they did it legally, they registered and they voted for an obscure candidate that was not going to win. I guess that's why they felt it might be okay. And when the vote tally came out for that precinct, the candidate, the obscure candidate, got zero votes. So how does that work? You know, so that they did a few, there were a few different things they did to try and see if they could figure out the integrity of it. That's, you know, the Russian side is where the people putting on the election presumably are distorting it. But what happens when a hacker goes in, you know, and is with these electronic machines, all it has to do is make sure that the right number of votes are recorded and how they're allocated. You know, if you can't tell, you know, unless you gather everybody who voted in a precinct and they all tell who they voted for honestly and you tally it up, you have no way of knowing. I think, you know, we shouldn't be going to like a Luddite approach to voting where it's all paper and, you know, people with green eye shades and stuff. But it seems like having some paper components and not having centralized counting would go a long ways towards making elections cleaner. Because think about if at least, at the very least, if they had to post, so if they counted the votes, if they tallied the votes at the place where you voted and they post it up on the wall, you know, it's posted on a piece of paper up on the wall. So then when they submit to the central counting place, you can look and make sure that the number that they got when before they sent this, but a lot of states now it's all central, and so they just hit a button and it, you know, dials into the local network and dumps all the tallies to the place, and so the only thing you have is, well, was the count, you know, was the right number of votes entered, you know, based on their records for who voted. Seems to me, you know, you could have, we've got these things called printers, and Hewlett-Packard would love to donate printers to all these places. It seems like the backup should be that you vote electronically, but that it prints out a vote that you could look, that a human could read, that says, I, you know, where you could look at it, and you take that vote yourself, and you put it in a strong box, and if it comes down to it, they can open the box up and count the paper ballots, and it says, not the butterfly, not like punch codes and scantrons and stuff, but actual, you know, read it and say, they voted for candidate Jones for, you know, for councilman, and so on. It just doesn't seem like it's that difficult, and yet we keep using the same old systems that are secured by the DMCA, you know, like the printer thing. You're not allowed to look at the code. Basically, they've said that it's trade secrets, and I saw, it's not in this article, but in another article, a large number of these voting machines that are being used around run on Windows XP.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of these cases, they're hiding behind, you know, the shield of saying, hey, we're not going to disclose because, you know, people will be able to figure out how, but I think they're hiding, like, how bad the software is, how old the software is, and the fact that it hasn't been opened up for, you know, a lot of different eyes, you know, not to say, like, open source is the way to go, but open it up for a lot of people to look at it and verify it and then use it. And there's a number of sites out there, like there's verifiedvoting.org that talks about voter verifiable paper audit trails, just like Pete said. You know, you go and you say, like, hey, I'm voting for this. It prints out your little thing. You can review it. And when it does, that, you know, little piece of paper gets shoved into a tube somewhere that you can go back. And they can, you know, if worse comes to worse, you can have an audit trail. It's verifiable. But, you know, Pete said, like, you know, dialing in to, you know, say who won. I mean, there are so many ways that could be intercepted. You know, there are ways to get in the middle of that at any point, and it's just, it feels kind of broken.
Yeah. There's, you know, I don't know if we'll ever find it out, and I don't want to do conspiracy theory stuff, but I'm gonna point this out as an example, because whether you were a supporter back in that election of one candidate or the other, it still doesn't look good. And if you flip it around, who, where it happened, you know, in the 2004 election. Which was John Kerry and George W. Bush.
And some guy named Chad, right?
In Ohio. No, yeah, that was 2000. Okay. You know, in 2000 where they had the trouble counting the votes. But in 2004 in Ohio, the failover plan in Ohio, if there was a problem with the servers for the state, then they would roll over and the counting, the tabulating would be done by a private third party that happened to be the same company that hosted all of the Republican Party servers for Ohio. And you sort of go, you know,
that's
again,
awfully
I'm
nice
not,
of those people.
And so the thing that happened, and you can go read this. This part I'm not making up. There was a failure and it flipped over to the third party for the tabulation, and that's where the tabulation came from. Well, you know, regardless, if you ignore which candidate, if I didn't say it was the Republican, if I should have just said one of the party's servers, would you trust it? Even if it's your own, even if it's a party that you perhaps supported, it smells bad. It is open for corruption, and we should be able to have a voting system where all sides can look at it and know that. That they can verify it themselves, so there's no, oh, well, just trust us, you know. And it's just disturbing to me that after how many years that we're still basically now that Russia's shown that they can do stuff, now that foreign governments have shown that they can affect our voting systems, now we're concerned about it. It's kind of like, you know, I locked my front door long before anybody, like, broke into a house down the street, you know, because that's called being safe, you know.
We should make it so that that at least 50% of the people have to vote for a candidate for them to win, just like in like homeowners association when they're trying to change the quorum
or whatever.
Yeah, so that way, you know, we'd have to have like 7 or 8 at least national elections before enough people voted.
No, they should have. Everybody should be automatically registered to vote, and everybody has some kind of marker that's already in place. And on election day, you go and you basically trigger your marker, you claim your marker, but all the unclaimed markers are put up for auction.
Isn't that how that works now? Oh no, wait. Hold on.
Or they're randomized. Some kind of randomizer just throws them at different candidates.
And to secure it so it's one person, one vote, you could, like, implant the marker in the person.
Well, you know, we could do is we could give everybody an internet identity. So, like, you could only log into your computer as you. You couldn't log in as your thousands of sock puppets. So you basically have some kind of biometric that allows you access to the internet, and it says this is you. You know, maybe it doesn't reveal your act.
I think it would be. It does. It
and
seems
then you can
to
vote online.
There's got to be a way that you could have online voting that would be secure and where you could know that, you know, that you put in your vote and then it got counted.
I bet somewhere in the deep dark recesses of Google or even like probably Facebook engineering, they're probably working on like we can vote through Facebook. Like Facebook will be the voting platform of the future.
Yes, but the universe that we live in. Twitter will be the one that comes up with the voting system that we use. So it's going to be like, and the tally is, you know, Bodie McBoatface just won the election.
Actually,
what we've decided now is to vote for president. Whoever gets the least number of hateful posts and trolls will be the winner. On the Twitterverse, on the Twitter system. Well, that's the news, I guess.
The news.
My cooks.org.kp site finally pulled up, and it looks pretty yummy. The two images that actually finally pulled
23
up.
23 ways to eat dirt and grass.
Do they have Soylent?
There's a lot of conserving food language. I translated it through Google Translate using Chrome, and the translation's kind of... But it reads kind of like you'd think it would read. Rock put luggage, world known kimchi, shipbuilding fee. I have no idea. Yeah. Translation not so good.
Recipe yields 2 grams, serves 7.
It just sounds super nationalistic, even the translation. It's blah, 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 blah. Yeah, national characteristics of the Korean people and the Western symbols, my country is drifting right, as well as the national colors were darker and hydrangea as food is rebooted, my home nation of precious love by all our people.
Add cornstarch, and by the power of dear leader, your gravy will thicken and not be lumpy.
Who taught himself how to pickle cucumbers? This is cool. Now my phone, I think they're hacking my phone. Okay, it's over. No more recipes. No more recipes.
Kim Jong-un says, stop it.
All right. So we are approaching, getting close to the top of the hour, but we still have some time here. What do you want to talk about, Lee?
Well,
you've been hammering away.
Oh, somebody's wrong on the internet. So I'm explaining to them.
Quick, to the keyboard.
I'm explaining to them how stupid they are. I'm just getting into a technical argument about data deduplication on APFS and whether it is or isn't compatible with native encryption, how encryption and data deduplication aren't necessarily mutually exclusive technologies.
You're schooling them, are you?
I am. I'm taking them to encryption school. So something that we can talk about if you guys want to, either before or after the break, or perhaps we can mention it now and then get feedback after the break, is I brought if anybody likes licorice, I brought some, these are Finnish salted herring licorice snacks. They're not actually fish flavored, they're just shaped like fish. And then this other bag.
Well,
these
I thought at first they were like fish flavored. Oh, that's horrible.
No, they're licorice
fisherish.
With a salty taste to them. And then I also have these Yankee Lachritz gefüllt mit Salmiak-Salz.
Which do contain real fish.
Which, no. This is, it's more licorice. These, the little fishy ones are chewy. These are hard, and they have, like, a liquid center.
What has triggered this?
Somebody was talking about Swedish and Finnish licorice candy online, and I was like, I wonder if Amazon has a bunch of that. And sure enough, if you guys want, if you like licorice, then you might like these. If you don't like licorice, then this will be... I don't know, some sort of horrible torture, and you wouldn't want to put this anywhere near your mouth.
But they don't taste like fish.
No,
right?
there is no fish involved.
Okay.
I'm
willing to try them.
They're shaped like fish.
Yeah,
but they don't taste like fish.
As long as they don't taste like fish.
No. Okay. They do not taste like fish.
I'll have to put this on in the background.
Because I used to have like a drop, which is Dutch.
It's the same idea.
Yeah, that stuff's pretty good.
That's pretty much exactly what this is.
Okay.
This is... Yeah, I mean, I can hold the bag up and make crinkle noises. Yes, it's exactly like drop.
No thanks. I do not.
You don't want any salzige Heringe? It's ohne tierische Gelatine.
Well, I think the important takeaway here is that thanks to technology, you can go buy something online that you wouldn't normally eat. And after ordering it and then eating it, you'll never order it.
Well, these, the little fishy ones that don't taste like fish but look like fish, I like these.
Do you?
This other one.
Are you a licorice fan?
I like licorice, yes. This other one I'm not so sure of. But yeah, I'll pass these out to the booth when we hit the break here, and you guys can get your licorice on. And then we can talk about licorice afterwards and talk about how much you loved or hated what just went into your mouth.
Well, awesome. And that was a good soundtrack there. So now everybody's got their mouth full of licorice except me.
We've exceeded our limit on IRC again.
I wasn't able to get on from the beginning. It's just it doesn't work.
Limit exceeded.
Yeah, session limit exceeded.
Salty
because...
licorice is a little different. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I guess that's an acquired. It's kind of an acquired.
Well, it's not actually. It's not sodium chloride salt. It's not table salt. It's ammonium chloride. So it's a different salt flavor. It's actually, weirdly enough, I was reading about this. It's actually a. If you have a cough or a sore throat, it's actually a very effective expectorant. It's better for you and apparently more. More effective than guaifenesin, which is the stuff you don't have to show your ID to get. So that's the dumb cough medicine that doesn't require your ID.
What is the component of licorice that makes certain alcohols taste like licorice?
I don't know.
Like ouzo or something like that.
I don't know.
Is it anise?
Yeah, I guess it's anise.
Anise?
Don't do the third pronunciation.
Anise, Navidad. All right, well, there's the...
Anise?
A nine in.
Cuckoo. So there's the soundtrack that tells us it's time to take a short break. So we're going to do that. We're going to take a short break, take care of some station business, and then when the station business is done, we'll come back. So you are listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
Blick did.
I'm Parrot.
I'm Lee.
And he's Failure.
Podnet.
KPFT's effort to elect a new board of directors is underway, and we've begun broadcasting statements by candidates for seats to that board. Over the election period, candidates may make remarks about the station and its parent organization. Please note these opinions may not reflect the position of Pacifica or KPFT. You are encouraged to research claims and to cast an informed vote. You can visit Pacifica's election website for complete candidate statements. KPFT needs your support. Make a secure donation anytime at kpft.org. Thank you for listening. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston. La 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 la
Your tax-deductible car donation helps make great radio. When you donate a car, truck, motorcycle, SUV, RV, or boat, we turn what is often a burden to many people into great educational programming. Proceeds from your vehicle donation benefit KPFT. Join others in your community by donating a car and helping create opportunities for local arts, music, and culture to flourish. Our car donation program offers fast, free pickup and towing from anywhere, an easy donation process, and an optimal charitable tax deduction. Call 1-855-573-8227 or visit kpft.org to donate. Again, that's 1-855-KPFT-CAR or visit kpft.org. Thank you. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT, Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT, Houston. We now return to Technology Bytes.
I've told you once.
No, you haven't.
Yes, I have.
When?
Just now.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
You didn't.
I did.
You did.
I'm telling you I did.
You did not.
I'm sorry. Is this a 5-minute argument? Or the full half hour?
Oh.
Ouch.
Just a 5-minute one.
John Cleese's acting has gotten really robotic.
Mm-hmm. Ever since he went for Brexit.
That's like what happens when you're hanging out with the nerds at Renfest after hours.
No, it's like if you're hanging out with Stephen Hawking after hours.
Can I...
Let me tell you a joke.
Flicked has a funny look on his face.
Can I talk about this candy?
Yeah, can we do a candy?
Did you get to the liquid part yet?
Should I not do it? I'm not there yet.
The kid will eat the middle of a Jacques-Nu first.
Yeah. Oh, see his face. Gosh. If you could see his face.
Okay, so we have to describe...
The outside of it's really good.
It's licorice-y.
Yeah, it's like a Werther's, but licorice.
But the inside is like salty, and it's, at the same time, it makes your mouth numb.
Yeah.
It's so salty.
No.
Yeah, it's not. It's like an explosion of salty grossness.
Is this, salty this is gross. Not an experience I want to have.
Just crunch it down. Really? Just bite it down.
No.
Do just, it. Flick
do it! Out.
It's like it's like a suicide cap.
It'll make you feel good.
Do it for
it's
all.
Sucks.
That's really, really wow.
There we go.
Yeah.
So ooh, this is...
I didn't realize it was a hard candy, so I kind of bit down at first.
Oh, yeah.
And then I was like, oh, it's a hard candy. It didn't just, like, break it open, right? It just cracked it.
Right. And then it just... Oh. You got a little
so then
bit
it just
it.
Started leaking out the ends, and it's... Ugh.
It was bad.
Did you do it?
I didn't even get to the middle.
No?
No.
No, it's...
I'm just not a fan of licorice.
I'm not a fan
with.
Of licorice, but I am a fan of horrible.
You should do it for the experience. This is really... I haven't tasted anything quite like this.
It's very difficult to describe.
It's like I'm drowning in seawater by a man made of... He's choking
really
me.
It's really more like gefilte licorice.
Yeah.
It's like numbing seawater.
Yeah. It's weird because it's got that numbing component to it. It's really
is it,
hard to
is
describe.
Is it something like, you know, your first cup of coffee, you don't necessarily like it, or your first
no.
beer?
No.
No.
I mean,
are you compelled? Or is there a part of your brain that's already calculating what it would take for you to eat another one?
No.
I'm trying not to exhale right now because exhale is the worst. Yeah.
Oh, here's a transcript from the ad. From the banks of Fukushima.
Come on, Jay. I'll do one if you do one.
Oh.
Have you done one yet?
Yeah, I had two earlier today.
You're a glutton. No.
I paid for them. Oh, I had to get my money's worth.
Each one.
I spent like $4 on this bag of gross foreign crazy
Has
candy.
Anyone tasted embalming fluid before?
Yes.
This guy had kind of...
Not lately.
Yeah. Oh. Has any...
Did you just go
right... Everybody...
Why am I doing this again?
Everybody's like bitten into a dead person, right?
Fear of technology bites. Of
I think the universe is preventing me from getting it out of the wrapper. Yeah. That's kind of
good. Sign, Jay. Do not put it in your mouth.
All right.
Don't do it.
You have been warned. Here it goes.
I feel like this is like, you
don't
know,
bite into it directly.
Put yourself like, live on Facebook.
We need to get his camera and get this a megapixel picture.
Do they make any that's got the Lacritz but not the Gefilte?
That's the other one.
Because the outside's pretty good, but the inside is horrible.
You're right. So the outside is not bad. I mean, I'm not a big licorice fan.
I have a vision of Jay falling over
salty.
On the floor and then a black foam coming out of his mouth.
All right, so I'm now going to bite down.
All right.
Oh,
I think I heard that one through the
radio. Jay's face is
what you can't get is his face.
Sunny. He's squinting very sharply. His head is rolling around back and forth. It's coming out the side of his mouth. And he's drooling.
He's seizing.
He's seizing. Oh. Cynthia.
Give me your cup. Oh.
Yeah. Oh. I need
There's
some water.
There's nowhere for it
Get
to go.
Get me some microspin.
Hey, just a sec. Is this supposed to be, like, finished
Oh, my
snuff?
God. It gets
like when the juice way. Starts coming out, you're supposed to spit it out of your mouth and not swallow it?
No, probably.
It gets worse.
Finished. No.
Now, shut your mouth and exhale through your nose.
It's like
or
a
plug your nose
finished
plug
skull
out.
Bandit.
I'm confused. Many ways
to... Go spit it out, Jay. Why would you torture yourself?
Where? Give me your hand.
Yeah, right. Here I come.
Why does the studio smell so weird?
Yeah, okay, stop taping. Bite.
Bite. Of the liquid.
Bite of the apple. I'd rather bite the apple. Oh my god, I'm gonna eat my iPhone to watch this taste. Right now.
I wanted to get one more of this in case I ever have an arch enemy or someone that I truly hate.
Yeah, I'm sure that soda goes real well with that.
Oh my god, you can't even drink a soda with it. I think you need, like, you know, goat milk or something.
Oh. Rotten
Do you expect
goat
me
milk.
To swallow
this? This is what I think. This is what I think. Whatever it is that a skunk shoots on you would taste like.
Tastes like DEFCON.
Four Loko, anyone?
All right, so for those listening at home.
Four Loko is way better than that.
Janka, J-A-H-N-K-E.
Janka.
Janka. If you Google it or go to Amazon and look up.
I did buy this on Amazon.
Be sure and order the.
How do we know that that's what
it.
It's supposed to taste? Is could this have turned?
Probably.
How would you know? But it's Lakritz Gefüllt. So L-A-K-R-I-T-Z, Lakritz.
Licorice.
And then Gefüllt, which is foul. Yeah.
No, it's Gefüllt. Gefüllt is filled.
Gefüllt is licorice.
Mit.
Yeah.
So it's licorice filled with salmiac salt.
Salmon salt.
And it's salmiac salt. That's the ammonia, ammonia nice. Chloride.
Yeah, there is no part of my brain. I mean, I can see where I'd want to do it again just to make someone else do it.
Oh, do you want me to give you like want one for Cynthia?
I want to hand those out at Halloween.
No, he would like to.
Oh, yes!
I just want bags
oh,
of
I
it.
Oh, I am
just
doing that.
Yeah, I keep thinking, like, I've got some stepchildren.
So it has the, I don't really.
When they're bad,
the
I will give
candy
them.
Thing
exactly.
going on, but it's not horrible. But then you bite in, and that is like.
It is something.
That is an experience.
It is a feeling.
That's what I'm
like
giving out
at Halloween.
That was
like the first time I got on the internet. Is this what it's supposed to be like?
We need to have a Kickstarter to have the Fresh Maker people make an ad for this product, too. And try to cover up the fact that it does not taste like Mentos.
There's a whole new ghost.
Mentos.
This is a whole new ghost pepper thing now. I'd rather have a ghost
yeah,
pepper.
I think I'd rather eat ghost pepper.
There we go.
All right, but so you didn't do it, though, Greg.
No, I didn't go the whole way.
He's not crazy.
Let's go all the way.
No.
Let's go all the way.
That's
not. So, yeah, if you want to take one home for Cynthia.
Oh, God, I can't do that to someone I love.
You could take a few of them and leave them on your desk.
Yeah.
Oh, I need to
put them in the bowl. Put them in the candy bowl.
There's a candy bowl at the reception desk.
You're going to lose some clients here. HP thing's going
to
fall apart.
And especially, you know, once
send some to the deer leader.
The sweet candy filling. You can't get enough of these.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
the thing is that you can't really convince someone to do it based on you doing it. It's like, oh, look, I'll do.
Right.
You can't even mask your own horror to trick someone else into doing it.
Why don't you take one and put something else inside of it, and they go, well, I'll do it, and then, yeah, there's no problem.
Yeah, but it's not got the, like, black
No, I mean, the only thing you can do is just to eat, like, a bunch of them, like in The Princess Bride, where you've slowly built up an immunity to powder.
They were both Gefilte.
Like, black river rock and put it in there and just pretend you know, just suck on that until...
No, I think a chocolate-covered almond or something.
Or a root beer candy.
Yeah.
Ooh, a root beer barrel.
Yep, so if anybody wants to experience what we just experienced...
You should bring those to the Geek Gathering.
Oh, yeah, I'll get another bag.
You know what?
The bag's not that expensive.
Now that it's done and it's like over with and it's been a couple of minutes.
Now that we've all been through this together now.
Very fresh breath.
It actually kind of has like a root beer, root beer candy taste.
No, I mean, what you're left with though, I mean.
Because once the salt taste goes away.
Yeah, I'm back to just having
kind of a licorice root beer barrel taste.
Still no fun.
And the chemicals make you forget how awful it was, and you want to try to
pop another one.
Really, oh, that's the amnesia drug kicking in there. Yeah. The Rohypnol.
It's Finnish
the Swedish
Finnish Rohypnol.
Licorice and phenobarbital.
I feel woozy.
All right, so we were going to do bite of something. Bite anything but this.
You know, the horror of
did you have one, Pete?
Gefilte. No, I didn't.
Oh, come on now.
Take one.
Everybody's doing it.
Have one on the way home in the car.
Ooh, take one for the pets. See how the dogs do.
Next time your dog barks on the air.
Dies in bizarre car accident on I-10. There was some sort of black foam all over in the car. We think he couldn't see out the windshield because he spit something all over in front of him.
These are German. The evil ones are German.
Yes, those specifically are. Both of these are.
Ah, I thought they were another.
I was going to say, what gave it away? The fact that it's got German writing on it?
Well,
says Lakritz Gefilte.
You said they were Finnish.
They
were Finnish.
The candy is of Finnish origin, produced by a German
company.
The
Germans saw an opportunity.
Attacked this with
it's the final
efficiency.
I was going to say, they made it the most efficient, nasty candy that they could.
We've refined it. Refined over 100 times to increase the intensity.
The Volks candy. It's the people's candy.
Well, you know how people like to complain about Finnish candies with a liquid center of awfulness? Well, if people like to complain about iPhone 7s, and there's always got to be a problem. I don't know if this is going to be the winner problem. I've got a couple of them, so we'll see which one wins out. You know, which one's going to be the class action lawsuit by some shady lawyer in California. Apparently, under heavy load, the iPhone 7 will hiss at you. They say
that
a number of early adopters have reported that both the regular iPhone 7 and the iPhone 7 Plus produce hissing sounds when they're subjected to a heavy processor workload, such as a game. They continue to function, but it's a bit disconcerting when most phones are virtually silent. It's currently unknown as to what's causing the hissing sound, and suspected causes include coil whine or similar electromagnetic effect. They said it sounds like, you know, like the speaker kind of crackling and hissing.
They're kind of like jumping beans. There's like a hissing roach in each one of them.
The Madagascar hissing cockroach?
No, it's the app that simulates eating one of those candies.
It looks like, so there's that one, and then there's one other brand. This, the one that Lee brought in, has like red and black coloring. There's one that's black and black coloring, and it's two times something with some salt in there. I don't know.
Oh, it's probably afraid. twice as insane.
Der Widowmaker.
I just went in and sorted by, like, does it have Prime? And bought a couple
It's Gefilte Loco.
Lakritz Loco.
So apparently not everyone's phone has hissed, and a number of users have put their iPhone 7 under considerable workloads with no hissing whatsoever. Apple has yet to reply to requests to comment on regarding the issue. The other one is this one I think more people would gripe about than the hissing thing. But apparently... Apple is working on a fix for an issue that can cause the new Lightning EarPods designed for the iPhone 7 and iPhone 7 Plus to stop working properly. Yeah, that's the thing that you want to screw up, is those headphones that you got rid of the regular jack that always works. Then you want your replacement, your new superior electronic replacement, to be screwed up. When using the earpods, there's an occasional bug that can cause the remote portion of the accessory to become unresponsive. While audio will continue to play, the remote does not work, so there's no way to control the volume, access Siri, or answer a phone call. That's got to be fun to discover. You know, your phone's ringing. Phone's ringing, dude. Siri, answer my phone. Nothing. As of now, it seems to be intermittent and random. And, oh, here's a solution that nobody would ever think to try. Unplugging the earpods and plugging them back in seems to temporarily resolve the issue. Apple plans to issue a fix in an upcoming software update, but there's no word on when that might be released. It's not known if third-party Lightning-based headphones are affected, but there have been reports of similar bugs with the Lightning adapter. Some headphones, such as Beats headphones with a 3.5mm connector, appear to have a non-functional remote when plugged into an iPhone with the Lightning adapter. So apparently that doesn't work right. Apple shipped the new Lightning-based earpods with each iPhone 7 and iPhone 7 Plus unit. This is the wire, just, no, I don't want to confuse people. It's not the ones that are the wireless little ones that you put in your ear and
the pods.
Don't have a wire connecting them. These are basically the Lightning modern equivalent of the, you know, white-wired iPhone, you know, earbuds that everybody had before. So,
The earbuds? Not the
AirBuds. It's like two golden retrievers that you put in your ear, and there's EarPods and AirPods, I think. And then on better news, you know, so just in case I've been making you doubt your massive investment in your new iPhone 7, DisplayMate, the guy who tests these things out to like seven decimal places kind of thing. DisplayMate has basically said this is about the best display they have ever come across.
Was that, that it was Ray virtually perfect. Sonniera, I think is his
yeah,
name?
Dr. Raymond Sonniera.
He's a good guy. He is, like you said, testing out to seven decimal places. That's what they do.
He says, let's see, his new review points out the following. The iPhone 7 has two standard color gamuts. If you don't know what those are, just ignore the rest of this. The new DCI P3 wide color gamut that's used in 4K UHD TVs and digital cinema, and also the traditional smaller sRGB that's used for producing most existing consumer content for digital cameras, TVs, the internet, and computers. What's more, on the iPhone 7, both color gamuts have been implemented with absolute color accuracy that is, quote, visually indistinguishable from perfect. That's what this guy said. This is a guy who, like, he eats, breathes, and sleeps evaluating displays, that's pretty impressive. Plus, only three manufacturers currently have the new wider DCI P3 color gamut on their smartphones or tablets, so it is a major competitive advantage. The iPhone 7 produces up to an impressive peak brightness of 705 nits.
That's a lot of nits.
That's way more than 704 nits. No, when automatic brightness is turned on in high ambient light, where high brightness is really needed. It has a record high contrast ratio for IPS LCD displays, and it has record low screen reflectance for smartphones. The last point he made is that given the exceptional performance of the iPhone 7 LCD display, there will be many consumers, journalists, reviewers, and even manufacturers wondering if Apple will actually switch to OLED in 2017, as has been widely reported, because apparently this is about as good as you can make it go. In the end, Sonniera gives the new iPhone 7 and iPhone 7 Plus displays and camera systems top marks, citing that other manufacturers will have to play catch up with Apple's new hardware. So the review is huge. So if you're really into that, you can go read it. All the I haven't mentioned it yet tonight, but all the articles that we talk about tonight are linked from geekradio.com. Or if you've followed us or liked us on Facebook, then they just come to you directly and automatically, apparently. Whenever I post it to WordPress, I guess our WordPress thing replicates it to our Facebook.
Wonder if we should post Lee's candy selection to anyone that really just has a good healthy shock of self-loathing running through
their bodies. I think we need to, that's for at the Geek Gathering where you can film it in person. And then Mac OS Sierra.
Right, it's not OS 10 anymore.
It's not OS 10 anymore. It's just Mac OS is out now. The question is, you know, should you upgrade? And there's a few things. Well, Lifehacker had a pretty good article on it. They said, despite dropping OS X in favor of Mac OS, Sierra is one of the least substantial upgrades we've seen in a while. They say that's not a bad thing, and in this case it means there's not nearly as much stress in upgrading as there's been in the past. Doesn't mean that issues won't come up. They say that those who should upgrade right away is if your Mac is less than a few years old and you're pretty invested in Apple's ecosystem, then it's a no-brainer to upgrade. They said the upgrade process is smooth, the changes are minimal enough that they won't affect anyone's workflow, and in general the new features are all good. You get Siri, that's kind of the big thing, it sounds like. With a quick keyboard shortcut or click of your mouse, you can invoke Siri, ask it whatever you need, and finally live out that dream of talking to your computer. The funny part, doing this show for this long, the talk to your computer thing, actually even before Technology Bytes ever was around, Apple had voice command on the Power Macs, the ones that were the like Power Mac 7100. There was one that looked like a pizza box, and that had a microphone, and you could do commands. And obviously, it caught on so big that they dropped it entirely in the next round of stuff. But this one apparently does better. Likewise, if you're using Apple Photos, you'll be happy to see some much-needed improvements, including photo search and face recognition. It finally made it into the app. And if you have a newer Mac, newer iPhone, and an Apple Watch, apparently you'll reap the most rewards from upgrading. Because if you've got a brand new Apple Watch, a new or newer iPhone, and a newer Mac, then you're pretty much such an Apple fanboy that you probably already have upgraded and you don't need us to tell you that you would like to. The people they say should hold off for a while. If you've got certain software that you use on a daily basis that's not kind of the mainstream stuff, you may want to wait until the developers of your third-party software can push out, you know, Sierra-oriented upgrades. But it can break, because it can break some. There's a link in the article if you go to geekradio.com, a list of compatible software, so you can see if your stuff is on it if you're trying to change. They say if there's any major complaint about Sierra, it's a change to the gatekeeper settings. Gatekeeper is the system-wide setting that prevents non-approved apps from being installed on your Mac. I mean, the idea is to protect you from malware type stuff. But if you've ever tried to install something and it said you downloaded this from the internet, and you know you are prevented from opening it, and you could you used to be able to change the settings on Gatekeeper to allow any app from anywhere if you were just that brave. You know, if you were the kind of person who would put a Lacra Gefilt in your mouth, then you could turn it on to allow any app from anywhere. Actually, I've run it that way. Now you only have two options for the default: Mac App Store downloaded apps and Apple approved apps. I think, you know, the deal is the Mac App Store is the tightest security, because that for them to allow it in there. Apple approved, I think, is a broader category. There is a you can, if you need it, you can add the old anywhere option back in if you go into the terminal. But I'm not going to give you that one over the air. The biggest thing is, if your computer is too old, you can't use Sierra. You shouldn't use Sierra. If you have a Mac Pro that's older than mid 2010, or an iMac that's older than late 2009, essentially, if your machine is 2010 or newer, you can run Sierra. If it's earlier, you're going to have to look, because some of them, like the MacBook, it's 2009 and some of that. So, and then the last thing is, some of the best features, the universal clipboard, and they have Apple Watch unlocked. This is one of those where, you know, I don't know when we'll ever be able to test it, because I don't have an Apple Watch. Nobody around here does. But they do have where you can set it with your watch. If you have a recent enough Mac.
You have to have one with 802.11ac.
Yeah.
It needs both. It needs Bluetooth 4 and 802.11ac because it uses the AC beamforming for part of the distance check.
Mostly late 2012 or newer Mac hardware, but you can unlock your you can use it to unlock your Mac. So you go off to lunch and your screensaver comes on, you come back and your watch will unlock your Mac. You know, that's a great reason to spend $600 on an Apple Watch 2 or whatever it is. No, but if you're already doing it, then it's kind of a neat feature. So there are, you know, you're not going to get on the older ones, you're not going to get a huge update other than the Siri stuff. So you know in advance. But it does sound like this one doesn't sound El Capitan. I know there was a lot of talk to kind of wait. This one, it sounds like most people, other than the ones I kind of mentioned in before, can go right into it, and or other than the few exceptions, you can do okay with Sierra. So that's all the Apple stuff. It's because right now, so we still got to get through the complaint phase because people are just actually, and the other phase that that doesn't get into the articles, but is the actually the cool effect of when you see somebody who's got a brand new iPhone 7 and you get to look at it, and the haptic button. I think you're looking at it with people looking at Jay's tonight. The virtual button thing is something that people, I think, find pretty cool. And the overall feel and use. The screen, looking at it, I mean, looks nice. It didn't strike me, just looking at it casually, didn't seem like it was like, you know, you didn't get the, like, choirs of angels or whatever when you looked at it kind of thing. Not like, say, the first time you ever saw, like, a Retina display.
Right.
Where it was like, oh, wow, you know, and then you looked at an old one and it looked terrible, but... you know, that kind of the, I guess the unboxing phase is still going on. That on Apple, that goes on simultaneously with the complaint and lawsuit mode of iPhone releases.
Well, as we were doing the news, I was checking into Shooting Raw with this. Now, Apple doesn't have a means for you to do that with their camera.
Really?
That I can tell.
I thought it was one of the big.
It captures the data, but you have to use an app that supports it to be able to interact with the RAW. And it doesn't look like it's that easy to get the actual RAW image off the phone. That I can tell, just doing some research while we're on
the
air.
So even with their own software, with their new app, with the Apple Picture stuff, it doesn't let you.
Doesn't seem to.
Well, because you need. I mean to turn a RAW file into an image, you have to process it. There has to be some kind of processing that gets done, and you know, somebody who just wants to shoot a picture of their kids or whatever isn't necessarily want to, I mean, unless they already are familiar with their RAW development workflow, they don't necessarily want to have to take a file and put it through another application and process it and then look at it and decide. So I don't know. I mean, are they using RAW for their own stuff?
I'm not sure yet. I have to continue researching. Now, the Adobe Lightroom app for the phone, which is free, by the way, will shoot in DNG. So it'll shoot a digital negative file.
Well, that's
and
good
then
enough.
And you can edit from there. And then there's a couple of other camera apps that'll let you do it. But, you know, it doesn't look like there's an easy way to transfer the file off the phone. I think you have to go digging for it, like when you connect it up to your... computer, but I'm going to continue to do research. But I would have thought there.
Essentially, you have to. Yeah, well, it sounds like you have to get an app, someone else's app, to make it work.
Take advantage. Yeah.
Well, and then you got to if you're gonna go that far, then you need to do something with it, right? Then you need to stick it into Lightroom or DxO or whatever your RAW application of choice is.
There was some way that I could shoot with the camera, get the RAW file. And then pull that RAW file off to my computer for processing.
You know what I bet you could do is if you put Lightroom on your Mac, you could shoot tethered probably and have it deliver the DNG directly to Lightroom's library. Because Lightroom supports tethered shooting. It's just a question of if it supports tethered shooting with the phone or not.
Or else Or I wonder if they're wanting you to do it through Creative Cloud, because it says here, I've looked up an
Maybe.
Article on it.
Well, Lightroom is still the one you can buy standalone.
For iPad.
It's just
this is just importing the file.
Yeah, no, it's just a question of if you hook the iPhone up with Lightroom running and enter tethered shooting mode, if it picks it up as a thing. Because I know Canon cameras, it gets funky, and sometimes Lightroom doesn't work with it, and you have to use Canon's stupid tethered shooting app. But Nikon, usually it's not a problem. I don't know. It's something to play with. The point is that the new camera stuff is automatic until you start getting into the advanced features, and then we're back into you need to be a reasonably skilled photographer and know how to work with RAW to get anything out of it so far.
Yeah, it looks like if you're doing the apps with RAW, that they get very quickly into, setting exposure, white balance, and
other stuff. You got to do all that. Because, that's what a RAW file is. It's not an image. The extensions vary. Canon's is .cr2. Adobe has its DNG, digital negative format. But a RAW file is literally the unfiltered, unmodified output directly from the camera's sensor, with all of that data in there. It's up to the program that you process it with to make that into an image. And that's why you stick a RAW file into Lightroom and it'll look different from if you stick that same RAW file into iPhoto or if you pull it into DxO has its own processing. Every application that you use to RAW process with is going to have its own algorithm to transform the RAW file into an image.
Right, and then there's information in the RAW that also tells the program what settings you use to shoot it with, so it can apply those effects. So you can set camera body and styles on there. There's also lens corrections in certain, all the programs like Lightroom and DxO have lens correction profiles. So if the lens is known for pin cushioning or distorting in certain ways, they'll do some auto corrections in there based on the lens data that's in the RAW file.
It's a good thing. It's what you want if you're going to be producing, professional images, because you can't just, you also can edit a RAW file in a non-destructive manner.
But I think it falls back to the whole thing with the iOS not really having a file system you can browse.
Yeah.
So if this thing, if the camera would just, take a picture, drop a RAW file, a lot of cameras, a lot of DSLRs have the ability to shoot RAW. And even if they do shoot RAW, they still have to render a JPEG of some quality for the preview so you can see what you shot, because you can't look at the RAW file. But so the phone should have something similar to that, where there's a native DNG or RAW file available, and that if you can connect it to a computer, you can pull it off. And I think there is, but I need to do some more research.
Well,
on
maybe
that.
if you shoot with it, shoot a picture with it or whatever, is there an option for it to when you airdrop it over to your Mac, can it send not just the image, but like the RAW sidecar?
It did
all
not
that stuff?
Seem to say, did not see that as an option, because I took a photo and I airdropped it, but it was just the JPEG rendering. Hmm. And if you look at the camera app, there's no settings to go back and forth. And I looked online, there's nothing with the native camera that talks about it. But if you use something like manual, or Lightroom, or apparently even Camera Plus should have the ability to shoot as a DNG or as a RAW file. I haven't found it in Camera Plus, but
I'm guessing part of it is probably that, if you think about what is the percentage of people using the iPhone 7 that are going to go through the effort to shoot RAW who aren't already serious camera nerds. I have a feeling that it's like up in the upper 90 percentiles that aren't going to do RAW.
No, I agree with that. I don't think that's going to be a driving...
So it wasn't worth making it easy or straightforward. Because you'd think Apple would release their app would support it. It's just sort of odd. I think it's just one of those that they could do it, so they threw it in, but didn't really do anything to make it...
Well, the thing that, as a photographer useful. That has always kind of dumbfounded me with smartphone cameras or phone cameras... is because the way that, any camera takes that digital information and renders it out as a JPEG, you lose quality in the image, especially in low light, because the noise reduction algorithms and stuff, the JPEG rendering in camera, even in native in the good cameras, renders JPEGs like crap It just they don't they're washed out or they're blurry or they're smeared and they have that raw data. So every once in a while I take a photo with my phone and I think, man, if I had the raw on that, I could probably process that out 10 times better. You know,
there was the thing, I thought one of the things from the when Apple announced it was the whole like adjusting focus and lighting after you've taken the picture. Those kinds of tools, I wonder if that's if they're aiming, if they've got their own format that handles that kind of that Lytro style of you know, where you can change the picture post photograph, I guess you'd call it. And if that's what they're more focused on than the raw stuff.
Well, yeah. I think right now it seems to be focused on in phone editing. So if you have an app that has a lot of cool features, all your manual settings and all of that, you shoot that raw file, and then you edit it. You're editing the actual DNG of the raw, and you out once you save that or you export that out or whatever it does.
Well, these guys are saying you're right. This is very quickly. I'm Googling here, turning down into a rabbit hole. But there's a couple of people on LightroomForums.net saying to transfer DNGs from iPhone to Lightroom. It says plug the Mac in with a USB lightning cable and click import in Lightroom, and it just pulls them right in.
Okay.
So apparently, even if you're shooting with a regular camera, it may still be back there, although you may have to shoot with manual or one of those other apps, because otherwise, I mean, you're going to be making a 22 meg raw image, so you shoot 10 images and your phone's going to start to, you know, fill up very quickly. It's not tiny.
Do you have a lightning cable?
Do I? I might.
I could try to import.
If you do enough, Morpheus appears and offers you. You can take the red pill and wake up and
I do have a lightning cable.
Or you can keep shooting raw.
Reasons why I got the extensively large hard, you know, storage space version of the phone was I was hoping to.
You can still shoot a few hundred of them before you start to. I mean, unless you've got infinity bajillion apps and everything else on there,
and
too.
I don't. I don't have a music collection. I don't have infinity gajillion apps. So I was hoping to fill it up with raw files.
You may have to. You may have to do that with, you may have to shoot raw specifically with a third party app with manual or whatever. But I mean, all these guys are saying there's like a bunch of posts on here now that are saying just plug it in and sync, and it pulls over both. These guys are saying it pulls it over in a stack, so a JPEG plus raw stack.
Okay, so let's
which
see.
Which should show up in Lightroom pretty easily, I thought. All right,
iPhone.
No photos
found.
Did you only take panorama, or did you?
No,
take
I
some...
took some regular shots. So let's see.
Stupid iPhone.
Huh.
Well, whatever.
Here, while that's going, we'll just run another segment alongside, and we can kick back and forth.
In the geek world, we hear about new gadgets and gizmos every day, but can they stand a dip? In the snark tank.
And our first story is shooting raw on iPhone. This one is the Elf on the Shelf too pervy and weird for you? I think it's creepy and gets your child ready for surveillance. Flicted found a really cool alternative that should scare the bejesus out of your kid and give them a right attitude about that kind of holiday times surveillance. It's the Krampus in the Corner picture book and plush toy. A creepy parody of the Elf on the Shelf Christmas tradition, Krampus is sure to scare the naughty out of you. the people who created it are fans of horror and fantasy and love the legend of the Krampus, the Christmas demon. In Eastern European lore, Krampus is the companion of Santa Claus. While Santa rewards the good children, Krampus punishes the bad and naughty kids. He has no mercy, and if you slip up, he will beat you, or worse. They have a book and a stuffed animal that you apparently could put around the house. Here's another great Christmas aspect of Krampus in the Corner is a warning. This book is not intended for young children. It is horror parody featuring scary situations and mild gore. So just what anybody would want for Christmas, especially for the young ones. It's a Kickstarter and has a lot of backers. Oh, yeah, you can tell this one's not real popular. On a goal of $2,800, they have $52,000 pledged so far. And there's still 9 days to go. So that might be they also have on some of it, you know, since it's got the Kickstarter, they have greetings from Krampus, 6 greeting cards featuring artwork from the book. So that certainly seems like I have a feeling a large number of our listeners might be interested in that kind of Christmas tradition. And then here, in case of this Shooting Raw stuff, in case you're really wanting a camera that you just take the darn picture and it spits out the photo and you can see it right away, Polaroid actually is making new cameras that print physical photos on the spot. To build on the success of its Instamatic Snap it released last year, the company premiered the Touch at CES 2016. It's an upgraded version that adds a touchscreen and a Bluetooth sensor. If the pre-orders are now going at Polaroid on their website to ship out sometime in October. It's under $200, but the deal is it has a few tricks besides the obvious virtue of seeing your photos on the touchscreen before you print them up. So at least this time, if everybody closed their eyes, you don't have to print it out and waste the photo. You can dump it. And the other piece is you get the electronic picture and you get the physical copy. You have to, of course, use Polaroid's proprietary zinc inkless paper, which starts at $10 a pack. But you know, what are you going to do? Unless you want to lug around an HP printer and plenty of authorized HP ink cartridges, you're kind of stuck. And then this one. Electric motorcycles, usually to me, they usually do them sort of too smooth and futuristic. So they are like smooth like the Tron motorcycles, but not as cool. And then this company called Night Shift Electric Motorcycles does more of the kind of rough edged steampunk raw kind of electric motorcycle that I don't know, is sort of oddly appealing. They've done 2 builds so far. One was called Rebel, which was a modified 1987 Honda Rebel 250. I had basically a predecessor bike to that when I was in high school. So it's a modified 1987 Honda Rebel 250 powered by the guts of a golf cart drivetrain. The second build, the Leafy Savage, is far more advanced. Its battery pack was taken from a Nissan Leaf, and a 2003 Suzuki Savage was used for the frame, hence the name, with an Enertrack motor providing a maximum output of 40 horsepower. That, you know, that may sound low to you, but on a light little bike, that's reasonably peppy. And it looks, the battery pack is exposed. I'm assuming that this is how you get the bike and you know, the picture, and that everything's out where you can see it. So this is one of those where they don't say anything about the pricing, so I would bet it's in the if you have to ask category. And electric motorcycles, if you're into that kind of thing or looking into it, you know that the price tags usually have 4 zeros or more when you start looking at that. I don't know what this one is. And then here's one I didn't know if we would ever have as a shipping product, a quantum computer. There is a company, D-Wave, is going to ship a 2,000 qubit quantum computer next year. This new computer will have double the qubits and up to 1,000 times the performance of its earlier model. So if you want to be all super futuristic-y, you can forget PCs and servers. D-Wave Systems is looking into the future with its quantum computer. Now, the tough part is they say it's 1,000 times faster than an earlier model, but how does it compare then to oh, I don't know, an Intel-based computer that we already have some kind of benchmarks or know something about, they don't say anywhere. But the D-Wave 2X is considered one of the most advanced computers in the world today. And then 2 or 3 years after that, there will be an even larger quantum computer. So actually, at least there's actually shipping stuff. Today's PCs and servers could ultimately be replaced by a quantum computer, which has been researched for decades. Beyond D-Wave, companies like IBM are also building quantum computers. They deployed what was considered the first quantum computer in 2011, and their systems have been purchased by Google, Lockheed Martin, NASA, and Los Alamos. So, you know, it seems pretty legit. The ultimate goal is to develop a universal quantum computer, which is being pursued by IBM. There are many ways to build quantum computers, and D-Wave system, which is based on the concept of quantum annealing. Quantum annealing. I wonder if that's how they make those licorice candies. It's aimed at specific tasks. IBM is using a different model to build quantum computers that can run multiple applications, much like PCs. See, the stuff this article doesn't say is the kind of the interesting part to me. How fast is this thing really? And when they say the concept of quantum annealing and that IBM is building something different that can run multiple applications, does that mean this can only do like one thing? Do you end up programming the whole machine to do, you know, so is it the basically the quantum...
Like a quantum kit computer.
Yeah.
Like an Altair in a box.
It's Pong.
So,
It's Pong.
D-Wave is still discovering uses for its quantum computer. Los Alamos bought one to study new computer designs and uses. Google's using it for machine learning and other applications. D-Wave is also offering remote access to its quantum computer to specific users, which probably means not any of us. So anyways, we'll see what happens. One of the things, you know, just the stuff they're talking about that's possible. In the future, it'll be possible for quantum computers to swiftly recognize a person in images as soon as the images are uploaded, instead of the kind of longer process that you have on today's servers. But you can read the article and find out about more stuff. One of the big things that's a problem with quantum computers, though, you know, that most computers, it's the one or zero thing, where quantum qubits state can be one or zero or another state. And one of the problems with it is it's hard to predict once they start interacting or, quote, entangling. However, D-Wave has achieved a level of consistency in stabilizing the logical qubits in its quantum computers. The qubits are loaded in a controlled environment that is cooled and heavily pressurized. So, I mean, this starts sounding like this is sounding kind of mainframe-y to me, but... if that's too high class for you, a guy in Australia has invented the ham dog. A hamburger and a hot dog combined together in a single bun. If you imagine... Yeah, basically, if you imagine... If you took a hamburger bun and you quantum entangled a hot dog bun with it, it's sort of like the no circle sign, you know, where there's the circle would be the hamburger bun, and then the hot dog bun just kind of goes through the middle of it, and then you have a kind of the hamburger patty has a like furrow in the middle of it, and the hot dog goes through there. I'm surprised they didn't go with some of the other alternate names. You know, the ham dog is okay, but wouldn't, like, what about dog burger? Wouldn't that sell great?
The yeah, dog
burger. Hot burger.
Get a big dog burger or a hot dog ham dogger. That could work.
It's just getting weird, man.
But it is patented. You know, I just wonder if this was on Shark Tank in Australia in 2015. I think you could with the use of toothpicks or some kind of food adhesive, you could make your own at home, or here's an idea: get a hamburger in a hamburger bun and a hot dog in a hot dog bun, and then eat them individually. I don't quite get the whole putting them together. Now, if it was a hamburger that had like a side of fries in it, that could maybe where you just have it all together. That sort of makes sense. But
could you call it like the dog burglar? Because it's like a hamburger that's packing a hidden hot dog.
Just sounds weird when you say it that way.
The hidden hot dog. It's in the burger.
Yeah. Why not? You know, I don't know. It seems like he could have gotten more.
Why?
It seems like he could have gotten more creative, where you maybe have where the hot dog acts as like an edible stick, and then the hamburger is like kind of impaled on the hot dog, or that could work. And then you kind of make it. I don't know. I guess toppings wouldn't be easy with that. I'm sure somebody'll or just you put the hamburger. You wrap the hot dog in hamburger and deep fry it, and you're at the state fair or the Renaissance Festival. And finally, this one I wonder about if there's going to be a real this actually kind of fits and makes sense. Apparently the head of the Pokemon company accidentally revealed some stuff about the new Nintendo NX. The Wall Street Journal quotes, I can't figure out his name, the head of the Pokemon company, they quote the head of the Pokemon company as saying that, quote, the NX is trying to change the concept of what it means to be a home console device or a handheld device. So it's not just a floor cleaner, it's also a dessert topping. If you, if you're a Saturday Night Live aficionado. So there's been a lot of conflicting reports about what the NX will be, but the thought is that it might be something that at Engadget, Sean Buckley at Engadget has gone deep into what Nintendo's NX could look like and how it would work. His feeling is that the device will operate like the Razer's old Edge tablet with hardware controls and a TV link at home, detaching to offer a lesser experience while out and about. So that does seem to leverage Nintendo's kind of handheld dominance and then just applies that to the TV, because they're certainly not cleaning up on the, you know, Wii front. And so if the NX would work that way, and if the idea was that each kid needed to have their own NX, and you just, if you're going to play multiplayer stuff, you just hook all of them up together, presumably. It actually kind of... If they can get decent performance and the size isn't too huge, it seems like that could actually be something that might be a clever, as opposed to the kind of lame, like having a weird jack so you could just plug it in and put your Game Boy up on the TV.
Or doing away with the jack altogether.
Well, I wonder about. Well, or else I guess they could do, like, if they have a dock, then it could have a video card, a more extensive video card to get you, HD when you plug it into your TV, when you hook it up to the TV, that you could get the, get the higher, higher quality stuff. So I don't know. This either means that Nintendo will move fully into sort of just the handheld side, that they're not going to try to compete with Sony and Microsoft in the console category, or this may be something that lets them kind of go beyond, because you don't have to. Microsoft doesn't have a handheld. I mean, other than I guess if you can play the remote stuff on your phone. And Sony's, the Vita stuff is, I don't know how much that's really doing anywhere. I don't think they're a big presence in the handheld space. But so having something that combines both, it would be interesting to see them try, I guess. It's my thought on it. I don't know. I guess it also depends how much it is. If it's $400, then I don't think they'd sell a lot of them.
No. No.
So that's all the try, buy, or fry. The other part I wonder about, though, is will they seem to have trouble coming up with games, with interesting games for the Wii platform. I have kids that are they're on the edge. They're starting to kind of age out of a lot of the Wii U stuff. But you know, the Mario Party and Luigi's Haunted whatever stuff and all that. And so Nintendo does the stuff that people really want seems to be the handhelds. And so maybe it's a wise move. If they're upgrading the handheld experience, then maybe this will work for them.
Maybe. I don't know. Nintendo's strategy seems to be really all over the map, and it always has been.
That's
they seem
true.
To be successful every time
in spite
by
of
accident.
Themselves.
Yeah.
Well, this one does seem like they could accidentally be successful with it again, I guess. And so I guess tonight the finale of Mr. Robot
is over.
It is the finale.
It
last
is the, finale.
The season finale.
Season two. Season two finale.
Season two
correct.
Finale. Not the
we're promised
not the total
a season,
season
three
and four possibly. Right.
Although I'm wondering
if it gets greenlit.
Again, no spoilers, but it's kind of like is anybody else who's seen it up to this point? Do you have any idea where this is going or what the heck is going on?
War hacking.
No spoilers, but my Nathan Matice, my the guy at Ars who does our podcast, said that he got to watch the episode earlier today because he has the press preview privileges and he gets the advanced screen so that he can have time to actually do the podcast. So no spoilers, but he said that the internet is going to love this episode. That's what he said.
Wow.
And I was like, Nathan, whatever do you mean? And he said, well, I can't really get into it, but the internet is going to really like it.
But at the very end, Luke Skywalker turns around and puts down his hood. And I saw a thing just in the stumbling around on the internet, a Q&A with Mark Hamill, not to detract from the...
Spoiler!
No, he said that he... that he felt really misled in the first, this is spoilers for Star Wars. If you haven't seen the newest Star Wars yet, then
turn
I don't
off
know,
the
too bad.
Cover your ears and say la la la.
Poor Han Solo.
And turn in your geek card because I mean you've been out on like rental video for
ever
months. So
if I blame the victims. You only have yourself to blame if you're listening now, because we're going to spoil Star Wars for you.
Han Solo dies.
What?
Let's see. I was going to go there. Luke Skywalker.
Have you seen it? You well, just know, right?
No,
you
I've haven't seen it. Seen, oh, okay. It's several times.
You know, this sort of the where's Luke Skywalker?
Does he die every time?
Thing.
Every single time.
It's
in
like
the same
you
spot.
You killed Kenny.
But they Mark Hamill
you
like
you
did
Jedi.
The studio
you
like
Sith.
Put Mark Hamill through training. And he had, you know, got into shape and did all this stuff. And then he really doesn't do anything physical in the course of the movie. He's
except stand up.
Really,
right?
In one scene, he, like, turns around, puts out his hand.
Yeah, but, you know, then they're going to do that. Then he's in the second one. And from what I've read, the second one starts, like, literally, like, that moment is when the second movie starts.
Excellent.
So, you know, like, they pull back and do the helicopter pan and roll the credits. And apparently, when two starts, it's going to be like, do the scroll, camera pans down, and then, like, we finish that shot out and we'll find out what's
jumping
going on.
Around like Yoda. In
yeah.
The,
Well, no, that worked out for Mark Hamill, though, because he's done a bunch of other stuff in the near term. He's done Squadron 42, which is a big, like, computer game with Chris Roberts, and he's done a lot of motion capture and on-screen stuff. So he's gotten to, like, enjoy, like, and do stuff with his new physique that's been public. He hasn't just been, like... training in secret, and he shoots one scene for Star Wars, and then goes back underground to,
his
like,
new
train
robot
some
body.
More.
So I didn't realize, I thought that for some reason that Rami Malek, I heard he won a Golden Globe, but no, the actual Mr. Robot TV series won a Golden Globe, as did Christian Slater
no,
for
Rami
best
Malek,
performance.
I thought, didn't he win an Emmy?
Okay, so Golden Globes and Emmys. I don't pay a lot of attention to shows, but there are awards.
Award
but yeah, they're winning some awards.
All right, everybody. That's enough out of all of you.
Nominee, though.
Yeah.
You have been listening to Technology Bites, special episode with Peter Hughes in the studio. And he's just carrying on. Barrett and
Peter
having their own show.
I'm Groove House.
I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett again.
I'm Lee.
And he's
Groove House again. .net.
Failure.
.net.
See you next time. We'll be right back.
Greetings, KPFT listeners. My name is Alma Vizcarra. As local election supervisor, it is my pleasure to introduce to you a local station board listener delegate candidate.
I am Adriana Casenave. Our membership dropped to less than 6,000 members. Meanwhile, some employees' hours are used in a campaign to discredit and slander the board members management cannot control. I represent those listeners who are concerned about the lack of community input, the disenfranchisement of Houston minorities, and the unsupervised use of KPFT's shrinking resources. I promise to stand on the way of the forces that from inside are working to bankrupt and hand out this independent media to a corporate religious institution. My mission, Pacifica's mission. My goal, preserve KPFT and the Pacifica Foundation for generations to come. Necesito tu voto. Thanks for your vote. Adriana Casenave.
Deep Sea Space, a performance by Karen Stokes Dance Company, is the culminating performance of a multi-year initiative inspired by the history and landmarks of the city of Houston. The evening-length live performances, October 20th through October 22nd at 8 p.m., will explore Houston for two of its defining industries, sea and space. The dance performance fuses history, landscape, and music through the lens of two iconic Houston enterprises, the Houston Ship Channel and NASA. In Deep Sea Space, choreographer Karen Stokes explores launching and landing through a unique blend of quirky and innovative choreographic styles that has become the trademark of her 20 years of work in contemporary dance. Stokes has commissioned a music soundscape by nationally known composer Bill Ryan, who has selected an all-star cast of musicians to bring his music to life.